Abortion, triathletes, air rage, young love, the end of the world. What do these things have in common? They're all just part of life in 20th century America. And they're all subjects for the imagination and pen of T. Corrugason Boyle. Boyle's latest collection of 16 short stories roams through the hearts of people in crisis and sometimes in the grip of modern mania. The characters aren't always sympathetic. But maybe that's because they're a little too close to ourselves. T.C. Boyle joins us from his home in Santa Barbara. Welcome. Thanks for talking to us today.
It's my pleasure, Lisa.
When you set out to write stories, do you start out with the desire to examine, you know, these kind of particular themes or modern phenomena and then come up with the characters?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this book came out just prior to the September 11th attacks. And everyone said, well, you know, you're so prescient. You know, here we have anthrax to worry about and air rage, not to mention what has happened to us. But I'm not really that prescient. I'm just like everyone else, listening to the news and reading the newspaper every day and wondering about all of these odd new phenomena that are going on in the world. Like the story Peep Hall in here, for instance, which is about internet voyeurism. You know, go and see the sexy co-eds showering and cooking eggs and taking their clothes off. Well, I wondered, well, sure, okay, now we have this phenomenon. Well, why? And in order to find out why, I like to write stories about these subjects.
Is that what you're doing? Are you trying to kind of puzzle out the problem in your own head, trying to answer the question why?
Sure. That's one of the great joys of writing short stories for me, is anything that I hate or really like, and nothing in between, I have to hold up for examination. Often I make fun of things, yes, as a satirist, but I think I try to go a little deeper, too, to find out how I really feel about things.
The story Termination Dust, which is the first one in the collection, mm-hmm. This and the second one, She Wasn't Soft, both tricked me. And then I felt, after I got to the end, I thought, boy, am I gullible, because I should have seen this coming. And what I mean is that the characters seem so good-hearted in a way at the beginning. Certainly with Termination Dust, which mm-hmm. takes place in Alaska, where there's, what, like 7 men to every woman or something like that, some terrible statistic that. And so they had this auction in the sense of get a date with a gal. These women are flown up from California, and all these guys are so excited, and they're going to this dinner, and they're going to try to get a date with one of these women. And the narrator seems like such a sweet fellow, but
yes.
Boy, does that change.
Yeah, I love to read this story in public. It's an eye narrator, so I become the guy on stage. And it is the setup, as you say. It was based on an actual fact that this club of women from L.A., they're a little tired with the kind of guys they were dating in L.A., you know, self-absorbed, cocaine snorters, 3 times divorced. They felt, let's go find some real men. So they flew to Alaska for the Labor Day weekend, 107 of them. And the narrator is a guy from a little town in the bush, and he's just a sweet guy. He wants to be married, and you believe him, and you trust him. And it was the ultimate experiment in using an unreliable narrator. And when I read it on stage, it's so much fun for me to see the eyes of the crowd as they reevaluate the character of this guy who's reading to them.
Is there a passage you could read for us?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I could read to you from the beginning if you like.
Sounds great.
Termination Dust. There were 107 of them, of all ages, shapes, and sizes, from 25 and 30-year-olds in dresses that looked like they were made of saran wrap, to a couple of big-beamed older types in pantsuits who could have been somebody's mother, and I mean somebody grown with a goatee beard and a job at McDonald's. I was there to meet them when they came off the plane from Los Angeles, I and Peter Merchant, whose travel agency had arranged the whole weekend in partnership with the Beverly Hills concern. And there were a couple of other guys there, too, eager beavers like J.J. Hotel and the Bad Element, by which I mean Bud Withers specifically, who didn't want to cough up the $150 for the buffet, the Malibu beach party, and the auction afterwards. They were hoping for maybe a sniff of something gratis, but I was there to act as a sort of buffer and make sure that didn't happen.
So here we have the good guy, and he stays pretty good almost until the end, and then things start to unravel.
Well, it's a story about obsession, I guess, and a misreading of character. For me, each story wants to be a little different. I don't want to repeat myself or become bored. I've written a lot of stories now. I'm committed to stories. I began as a story writer before I ever began writing novels. I'm writing stories right now. Even in fact, when you called, I was just finishing up the day's work on a new story. To me, it's a wonderful opportunity to just let my imagination run wild. In fact, I think a story is an exercise of the imagination, so that rather than confining myself, let's say, to the autobiography of my own miserable life, I can write about anything, any scientific discovery, any phenomenon that's happening in society, as we said earlier. It's just wonderful to be able to try to put the elements together to see what they mean and to make something concrete out of it.
You know, I would think that for some of these things, you'd have to have your opinion already formed about what you think. But do you find sometimes that in the course of creating characters and writing a story about whatever the topic is, that you change your opinion or a completely different opinion is formed?
My readers, I think, have a good sense of how I stand on various issues. And yet still, I try to invest myself in the characters so that I can give a fairly balanced view, because fiction is not supposed to be a polemic. You know, you can't convince somebody in fiction to do something. If I had a position that I wanted to get out to the public, well, I might write an essay or stand on a soapbox, you know, or write speeches. A fiction is something else altogether. It's a different way of investigating things. So even if I do have an opinion to begin with, I'm not saying necessarily that stance or opinion may change, but certainly my position would be deeply buried in the story. I'm not interested in convincing you to do anything. I'm just interested in having you enter this world of my fiction, in the way that you enter the world of any work of art, to enjoy it.
Well, enjoyment is a funny word, isn't it? Because some of these stories are, it's not like it's so unusual that stories are dark, but some of these stories in this collection are very, very dark. And I suppose, yes, we enjoy it in a weird way.
Recently, with my students at USC, we did a book by Cantor Roof, The Plain Song, that has a happy ending, and it is about good people doing good things. And I love the book. About half the students hated it, because how can you have a world in which good people do good things? We want dark and miserable stories. It's so much easier to create a character who is evil than one who is good. It's just one of those peculiarities of our art. I don't want to depress everybody or to be depressed. I mean, these stories are full of joy and life, and they're funny and, you know, all of that. But the ultimate vision, I guess, is a pretty dark one.
Mr. Boyle, I know you said that you try to write stories that are different and to approach subjects in different ways and not to repeat yourself. I have to ask you about a line or a sentiment, I guess I should say, that I found recurring in these stories. I even dog-eared the pages so because I found it so often. For instance, a character would say, or a narrator would say, "I didn't know what I was doing or what I was feeling." Or, "At that point, she didn't know what she was doing." Or, "He remembered nothing or practically nothing." It's as if these people have become, at certain points in the stories, mindless, just driven.
I also like to use a line like, "She was thinking nothing." You know, it's a kind of a neutral state that we are all in at a certain point, and I suppose then we're susceptible to various inputs. I spend a lot of time in the Sierras just walking by myself, and I'm not thinking. I've shut down my conscious mind, and I think in that case, it's probably for the good. Maybe in the case of some of these characters, it makes them more susceptible to, let's say, a scheme. I often write about schemers and con men.
Do you ever laugh when you're writing your stories?
Oh, yes, of course. I laugh when I'm writing the funny parts. I feel very, very sexy when I'm writing the sexy parts. And usually around lunchtime, food enters into the stories. Yeah. No, you know, it's speaking of the animal nature, there it is. You know, even the animal nature certainly dominates the rational, even in writing, and especially in fiction writing, because you try to get into that meditative state where you are tapping the unconscious and not fully aware, and maybe your body makes you aware in some ways. But yeah, sure, I do relish the funny parts.
So when I get to a point in your short stories from now on, or anything you write in the future, when the characters sit down to have a meal, I'm going to think of you there in Santa Barbara, in Montecito, being hungry for lunch, right?
I shouldn't have told you that. Well, you know, also sometimes work goes way beyond lunch, you know, and sometimes you have to just write the dinner scene even when you're sated, you know, and that's where the imagination really must come into play.
T. Corregison Boyle. His new collection of short stories is called After the Plague. He joined us from his home in Santa Barbara. Thank you, Mr. Boyle.
Thanks, Lisa.